The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Well, it's hot today, so how appropriate to be talking about Kishtigarbha, who often finds himself in hell. So, but as hot as it is right now, there are places in on our planet that are 30 degrees hotter than what we're experiencing. And that's also a sobering thing to think about. So, for those who don't know, but you all do, I know, but for those who don't know, bodhisattvas are, bodhi means enlightenment, and sattva is being. So they are enlightening or enlightened beings. It's enlightening beings, because it's a verb, not a state. It's a verb, so that's really important. And Kishtigarbha, I'm going to call him a variety of names. Jizo, Kishtigarbha. I'll be referring to the bodhisattvas a lot during this talk, because it's actually this talk is about developing a deeper friendship with the bodhisattvas. How do we do that? And it'll be based on my own experience, of course. In Mahayana Buddhism, we have four main bodhisattvas. One is the bodhisattva of compassion, which is Avalokiteshvara, Kuan Yin, Canon, those are her names, his names. They are, most people know the bodhisattva of compassion. The bodhisattva of love and practice is Samantabhadra, and he is in the Avatamsaka Sutra, which that in itself, if I talked about Samantabhadra, that would be in its own Dharma talk, but I'm going to try and cover the concept broadly. And Manjushri is the bodhisattva of wisdom, and Kishtigarbha is the bodhisattva of great vows. And interesting, his name is Earth Store, Earth Treasury, Earth Womb. So he's very much related to Earth. So as you can see on the altar, if you're here, or in general, scrolls of Kishtigarbha often show him or her standing on a cliff in hell, and being the fires raging around, or being still. In Buddhism, hells can also be cold, and there are some monks who know that being really cold is definitely a hell realm. So many years ago, when I was a layperson, Reverend Master Hubert, who has since died, of course, was our former translator. He did a Dharma talk, Reverend Master Hubert. And he said in the Dharma talk, he said, "Buddhists believe in hell." And then he said, "And don't tell me you haven't been there." Case in point. Well said. Because it's easy, depending on our background, to think of hell as a specific place. But actually, hells can occur anywhere and at any time. And we all know that. You look at the news, you see people in hell realms. You know, wars, forced migration, terrorist, mall shootings. I mean, these are hells. These are hells. Racist behavior, all these things, genocide, floods, fires, they're all hells. And, or they manifest as hells, they can. And it doesn't even take a dramatic situation to be in a hell realm, as we all know. Just try being in a room with a running toilet or a leaking faucet, or driving can be a hell realm, or working with someone that we just don't like. Oh, could that be hard? So, now before I go on about the bodhisattvas, I want to tell the story. It's one of my favorite stories in Buddhism, and I think it relates quite clearly to a lot of Kishtagarbha bodhisattva and just bodhisattvas in general. And it's one of my favorite stories, so I'm going to tell it again. I've told it before, but it's a good story. So one day, there was this man, and he was not a nice man. He was a murderer. He was a rapist. He stole. He was really mean. He harmed everybody he came into contact with. And he was walking across a field on his way to a village where he was going to do more of the same and plunder and cause havoc. And there was this little spider that was walking in front of him. And instead of just stomping it and squishing it, which is what he would have done, he just stepped over it for some reason. Anyway, this man soon dies and goes to hell. And he ends up, this is kind of gross, but this is the way hells are, he ends up in the sea of feces and urine. That's a pretty gross hell if you think about it. But anyway, and so he's, this is beings who do terrible things. He's been reborn in this place, and place or non-place, but and he, all the people that are there drowned and then are reborn right back into the same place, because that's part of how the karma is being cleansed. So, meanwhile, in the Buddha's realm, the Buddha is sitting beside a pond. And in that pond, beside the Buddha, is a little spider, the little spider that didn't get squished. So the spider, through the power of the Buddha, he shows the spider the man down in hell. And the spider immediately starts spinning a thread. And it lowers it through the pond, through the water, and down into the hell. And the man looks up and sees the thread, and he grabs onto it, and it doesn't break. So he starts climbing up the thread to get out of hell. And other people see him, who are in that hell, and they start running over, or swimming over, and they start trying to climb up. And so he turns around and thinks, oh my God, the thread's going to break. So he tries to kick them off. And immediately the thread breaks. Now, this story has many teachings, okay? one is that the power of doing good. That, you know, people can do terrible things, but they can also do good. And the power of that good is really important. So every little good we do has its weight, and don't forget that. The other thing is, the thread of compassion is there for all of us, and it's for us to share. And I used to think about that man in hell, and I used to send people in hell a message of help each other, help each other. That's the way out of hell. When I was a child, a young teenager, I volunteered at a mental institution as part of my campfire group service. And you could tell the people that were getting better because they started to sweep the floor. They started to do things for others. So doing things for others is a way out of hell. Not the opposite of, I got to get out of here. But it's, we are in here, we got to get out. So it's really important teaching. And of course the teaching is, I love this story, is don't harm spiders. They're our friends. So, and so are the bodhisattvas, okay. so anyway, to continue, but you'll see how this story relates. So Jizo is standing on a cliff of hell, and he's got his shakyujo. Now, it's interesting. His shakyujo is his staff that he shakes when he walks to warn little creepy crawly things that he's coming. So I think the spider ties in very nicely to this story. So, you know, it is compassion. When we take a step, be compassionate. Be careful where you put your feet. I watch where I put my feet. When I see a little ant running along, I try not to step on it. We're all connected. Nobody wants to be stepped on. I mean, come on, we don't. Nobody does. So anyway, but what also in his left hand, he's holding the wish fulfillment jewel. And that is the light. But it's the light within us too, sorry. It's the light within us. It gives us the light. But actually, we have the light. It's within us. The wish fulfilling jewel is within it. But he's just sitting there in hell. He's not going around and shoving it or saying, you need this. It's there for whoever wants to look at it and go into it. And I think that's a really important part of our practice with the bodhisattvas and how we help as they help. So, anyway. Now, as I mentioned, all the bodhisattvas have different names. And some of those names and some of their appearances are different genders. The bodhisattva of compassion is male in India, female in China, in Japan both. You know, there's this fluidity of genders. Kishtigarbha was... In the Kishtigarbha Sutra, the story was that in another universe, another world, which is typical of Buddhism, there was this woman who was following the teaching of a Buddha, and her mother didn't support her at all and basically slandered her religion and so on. And when her mother died, she was really concerned about her mother. So she made all these offerings for the benefit of her mother. And then actually prayed and was allowed to go to hell to find her mother. So she gets to hell and she tells the guard her mother's name. And he said, oh, that person, she had a faithful daughter. They did a bunch of things for her and she's now gone up to heaven. Better circumstances. So the importance of helping beings is they are right there. We just offer merit and loving kindness for being. But this woman was so moved by the suffering of hell that she vowed to come back and help other beings. And that became the monk Bodhisattva Kishtigarbha. And I think it's really interesting. Most of the Bodhisattvas are not monks. Kishtigarbha is. And it's an intuitive understanding of why that is. But I think when you see what Kishtigarbha deals with, there is a certain monastic training that he needed in order to become this bodhisattva. So that's how I look at it. Now, as those of you who know me, I've trained as a monk. But I also have trained as a layperson, and actually I trained as a layperson as long as I've trained as a monk, which is really long, which is why I'm old and decrepit. But anyway, I'm mentioning this not because I know from personal experience that all of us need to develop deeper friendships with the bodhisattvas, and that nothing hinders that. Being a layperson is a perfect environment. My house, when I was a layperson, had, as those who know, statues everywhere. It was just such a part of my life. The bodhisattvas were part of my life, and they still are. If you come into my room, it's stuffed with statues and pictures. Okay, now, there are dramatic stories of people taking refuge in bodhisattvas. especially the Bodhisattva of compassion. So Dogen, case in point, when he was crossing, I believe it was when he was crossing the sea to China, there was this terrible storm that came up, and the boat was, the waves were going into the boat was beginning to sink, and everybody was in a panic. And he said, recite the canon scripture, recite it. And they all recited it, and he actually had a vision of Kanzian on the waves, and he knew they would be all right. And they, sure enough, they were. As you know, he made it to China and then brought back Soto Zen, the serene reflection, to from China to Japan. If you haven't read the book, it's a wonderful book. It's John Blofield's book, The Bodhisattva of Compassion. In it, there are multiple unusual stories. And one of the stories was of a man who was about to kill his stepmother. His stepmother had hounded his mother, who was the first wife in China. Did I say Japan? It's in China. in China, his father, sometimes men had multiple wives. So his father had a wife that was the mother, the original mother, the first wife, and the son later, he took a second wife. And the second wife was malicious and was unkind and was really, gave the first wife so much trouble that she said, well, what's the point? And she just let go and died. So the son was very angry at his stepmother. He felt she had killed her, his own mother. So he was going to murder her. And they were out, and they were walking and alone. And so he picked up a big stone, and he was walking towards her, and she turned around and saw him. And she took refuge in Avalokiteshvara. She just took refuge. And the man's arm froze. He could not move. And she went, thank you. And she walked off. Interestingly, the man was deeply grateful that she helped him, that the Bodhisattva helped him, that she prevented him from doing this. He went, oh my goodness, what was I going to do? Kill another person. So he changed. But on top of that, the second wife, she got much nicer and sweeter. So she too was affected by this situation. So there are lots of stories about bodhisattvas rescuing beings, but that's not really all they do, and that's not their primary, the primary thing they do. They are a source of refuge for us. And as we all know, difficult and bad things happen to anyone. No one's exempt. So the bodhisattvas are our refuge, our place of going to. I'm going to tell another story of a monk who had a past life come up about a woman who was devoted to Avalokiteshvara. And she was Chinese. She went to Puto Island and was on pilgrimage during the war. And some soldiers came and raped her. And she took refuge in the Bodhisattva of Compassion, and nothing happened in her mind. And she never told anyone. They left her. She never told anyone. She didn't finish her pilgrimage. And she felt betrayed by the Bodhisattva of Compassion. And I think that's really important teaching for us, because the Bodhisattvas work with us. And there are things we may need to learn, or karma that may occur, that's very difficult for us, and that we cannot assume the bodhisattvas are going to fix this. That's not what they're about. They're not fixing the situation. They are about refuge are taking refuge in something greater than ourselves, and in difficult situations going to that. So I think that's a really important point, because that happens. Conditions arise all the time in our life. We're always being thrown by conditions. So the bodhisattvas, taking refuge in them, is a way to go deeper with that. Now, one of the ways we can take refuge is to chant the sutras and offer it for the benefit. This is what we did today. We chanted a portion of the Kishtigarbha Sutra, which was very beautiful, and we were offering it merit, both to the bodhisattva, but also offering it out to the world. And that this helps. This is what part of what we do. But you can actually do it as an individual trainee, and I do it a lot, because things are fraught. And when I hear about fraught, then I start including the fraught in, what does it take? 10 minutes to read the Avalokiteshvara Sutra. But it has incredible power. It really helps. I've actually done it at times in the middle of the night when I woke up or couldn't sleep. And it just relaxes not just me, but the situation, makes it better. So it's just really potent. Now, the Kishtigarbha Sutra is not easy to read. If you've ever tried, you will know it's about one hell realm after another and one gory thing after another. And it's pretty intense sutra. But it doesn't mean it's not worth reading on occasion. And I find it's very helpful to read it. I have found, on rare, that I've only read it. Well, I'll tell you about this story that I did, which has nothing to do with me, but it actually has to do with just what I'm talking about. When my mom died, after my mom died, there was a feeling, I had this feeling, this was a year or two after she died, that there was something that needed some more help. And so I was a novice at the time. It was winter, it was cold, it was a rest day, so I was all by myself. I sat in the Kishtigarbha shrine, and I read the whole sutra for her and someone else's benefit who I knew had died and was struggling. And it took me 4 hours, 3 hours to read it out loud. It was a long, long thing to do, but it helped. There's something really powerful, and that's the point. There's something really powerful about these scriptures and our offering them to others. So even if we just do a little, it's very powerful. Now, as you all know, bodhisattvas are often depicted really huge, expansive beings. But that's to show not necessarily their physical expansion, but that's part of what bodhisattvas do for us, is they expand our view, expand our minds. We tend, especially when we suffer, we see just our own suffering, just our own problems, and it gets very narrow. Or it's just, if only this person would do something different. And it's not that way. It's much bigger. And the more bigger we can make it, the more expansive we can make it. I think that's the bodhisattva's help for us, because they are really expansive. When my daughter was and the Sangha kids were young, there was a Sunday, Dharma Sunday school for the kids, because there were a lot of them. And so the kids would go to the Jizo shrine, and they would all sweep the Jizo shrine. They would recite this verse, which is a very interesting verse in light of that dear little spider. The verse is something to the effect of, may all the little beings that we step on and kill in the result of our running around and living, may they be reborn to a higher life. And then they swept the shrine, and then they went to their Dharma school. So I was in the shrine putting away the the brooms. And something happened, and I don't know what, but I went up to Jizo, and I said, "How may I help you?" And then I went away, and I went, "Oh my God, what have I done? I'm going to go to hell. I'm not sure I'm ready to go to hell." You know, I got really terrified. Totally not necessary, because bodhisattvas are compassionate. And what that offering does, when we offer to help them, is we come to understand what vows mean, what compassion means, what love means, what wisdom is. It's through them and expanding to their teaching and considering, oh, how can I help here, that we do grow as trainees. I mean, think about it. Can you imagine being in hell all the time? I can't. I mean, that is a hell. And imagine the strength it takes. You know, what does Jizo or Kishtigarbha manifest? They manifest this stillness, this kindness, this offering, but they don't get in the middle of it. And I think that's probably an incredible teaching for us all. You don't have to get down and try and fix everybody who's in hell. When somebody's ready to look up, they'll see you. And that's really, really profound, really hard. So it says in the Dhamma Sutra that generosity without expecting anything in return is the highest virtue. So when we connect and align with the bodhisattvas and offering to help them, as well as asking for their help, we are, in a sense, giving, and they are giving, giving and receiving. It's mutually coming back and forth. And it's very powerful. And this is the meaning, I think, of interconnectedness. It is that we share these things and we expand each other, and that's a huge part of training. So I'm going to end because it's hot. Thank you all very much.